The following program is a paid advertisement. The views reflected on this show are not necessarily the views of ESPN 1000.
Doctor.
You're listening to Sports Medicine Weekly with Steve Cashel and Dr. Brian Cole on ESPN 1000.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Steve Cashel. Welcome to another edition of Sports Medicine Weekly. Soon I'll be joined by my co-host, Dr. Brian Cole. He's the head team physician for the Chicago Bulls and sports medicine specialist, orthopedic surgeon from Midwest Orthopedics at Rush and Rush University Medical Center. Got a great show for you lined up, and our first guest is going to be the founder of a new wearable technology, BioStrap. Samir Santaki will join us from Los Angeles. It's the future of wearable sensor data. And he'll talk about the future of BioStrap and also how he got involved with this and why it's different than typical usable wearable technology. And then there's some misconceptions about stem cell therapy out there. Dr. Cole will give us his views and tell our listeners what to look out for and how to be aware of some of the so-called snake oil salesmen out there trying to sell stem cell therapy. And then, finally, Dr. John Pawlowski will join us. He's a surgical director and chief of pediatric orthopedics at Children's Health Andrews Institute for Orthopedics and Sports Medicine, talking about the challenges of treating pediatric patients in orthopedics and sports medicine. We'll talk about growth plates and all the interesting things about your kids. So stay with us. Our website is sportsmedicineweekly.com. Back to get it going right after this on ESPN Radio.
Feeling tired, sluggish, and overweight? If you're looking to lose weight and gain energy, join us in Karen Malkin's 14-day transformation cleanse. You're going to absolutely love this Whole Foods cleanse. You'll feel great, lose weight, build lean muscle, improve sleep, boost metabolism, and enhance athletic performance. This VIP done-for-you cleanse comes with a 14-day transformation wellness bag containing MCT lean vegan protein blend, fat-burning MCT lean MCT oil, snacks, superfoods, recipes, guidelines, videos, and other surprises. You will absolutely love this program. Sign up at 14daytransformation.com. That's the numbers 14daytransformation.com or visit Karen's website at karenmalkin.com. That's karenmalkin.com.
You're listening to Sports Medicine Weekly with Steve Cashel and Dr. Brian Cole on ESPN 1000.
Back here on Sports Medicine Weekly, our producer Steve Goffman, our coordinating producer Teresa Ann Seeger. I'm Steve Cashel with Dr. Brian Cole. Reminder to reach out to us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at SMW Home. Dr. Cole, let's talk a little bit about working out and the new science of wearable technology. Do you use any? I know you work out a lot.
You know, the only thing that I use on occasion is the heart rate monitor. That's it. You know, there's so much amazing technology now that gives information and data. Obviously, this sort of Fitbit concept that, you know, ranges from what you wear on a wrist to what you can put in your shoe, and people respond to that data. So there's just been a huge explosion in technology in this space. But me, I'm pretty limited and really basic.
You think we're not that far away from putting a chip in the neck and measuring data
under the skin? Yeah. I don't think we are, to be honest with you. I think there's probably lots of things that could be monitored by something in place permanently or, you know, that would occasionally need to be checked.
Maybe we'll start with the professional athletes, right?
There's some very similar stuff. Not gotta yet get implanted,
the,
but
gotta get in the CBA,
like
the collective bargaining agreement first. Let's bring on our next guest. He is the founder of BioStrap. Speaking of wearable technology and the future of wearable sensor data, Samir Santaki is with us. And Samir, thanks so much for joining us. He's joining us from Los Angeles this morning. So thanks for getting up with us. And what makes your product, BioStrap, different from other wearables?
Hey, nice to meet you. And thanks for having me. So actually, I think there's two distinct factors that I can think of. It's really our full body activity classification and the deep biometric insights. And what that means is, so the biometric data, typically what your Fitbits of the world, what they do is beat counting, which is good overall just to know, okay, I'm like 56, you know, beats per minute. That's good. But we want to get more data. There's so much data embedded in that, you know, that pulse wave. We can actually grab 29 different physiological parameters just from that. Like there's heart rate variability, blood oxygen saturation, respiratory rate, things like that actually are more toward your total health. These are things that you should be tracking, but the typical you know, wearables just don't look at that information. And, you know, I think they're really missing out.
So is this a strap that will monitor a bunch of different bodily or physiologic functions, and then does it do a sort of a smartphone type reporting function?
Yeah, exactly. So there's a smartphone component which does kind of the brains of the matter, and then there's two wearable components: the one that goes on your wrist, and then one on your foot. So really, there's two different sensors that work in synchronous fashion that kind of give you more sensor data. You know, one that's measuring your arm movement, one that's measuring your feet, and kind of putting it together to understand what that activity that you're doing and classifying that. Like, let's say I'm doing a pull-up or doing leg press or whatever exercise or movement you want to do, it'll be able to track that in two different, you know, sensor points in your body.
Samir Santaki is with us, BioStrap. He is the founder, joining us from Southern California. Where do you see the future of this product, Samir?
Yeah, so right now what we do is we want to be able to put more sensors on your body. I think that's where we are. Like what you were mentioning with the chip on your neck, I mean, that's not too far off either, I don't think. So I envision putting more, you know, people want to know more about their bodies. I think we're going to have more, you know, more things, more sensors on your body to track more data. And eventually, I actually see this being used in more of a clinical setting to maybe do some detection of maybe sleep apnea, AFib, heart arrhythmias, these kind of things, much more. You know, things that, you know, are wearables, you can get that information, you know, from all these, if you do, you know, these biometric insights. That's really where I think where BioStrap actually can be headed. Of course, that needs more FDA approval, but I think we can actually see this in our data.
So how do you teach sort of the average individual that, say, has a high interest in health and wellness, but, you know, I can't imagine all these data points, these 20-plus data points, are going to be interesting or even understandable by most.
Exactly.
And then you have to have norms or, you know, you have to have norms by age and gender and things like that. So I guess the place that I always struggle with is how much is too much information, what can be really used by someone. What do you think sort of the top five most valuable data points that the average individual is really into health and fitness and who exercise on a pretty regular basis, who combine some type of aerobic with, you know, a strengthening program, would find a value that you can't get get anywhere else?
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, I think knowing, just I can name a couple, is so resting heart rate is actually really important. I think more so than active heart rate. This tells you how physically fit your heart is. And resting heart rate is basically what your heart is when you're sleeping. And then the next one is HRV, which is heart rate variability. This is actually not terribly new. I think it's been used before, the last few years. And currently it's kind of being reused for basically indicator of stress. And actually it's definitely even used in a sports field too. And specifically, if you're overtraining, you can actually see your HRV drop. And when it's dropping, that just means that your nervous system needs a rest and needs to kind of balance out. I mean, a lot of people use HRV for a lot of different, things like this. And it's actually, I think, probably the most important thing to track. And all it is really the time difference between two different heart wave pulses, the time difference between them. So that's extremely important. And then the next one, probably like just respiratory rate, I think. That's basically how many breaths per minute you take. The average person takes like 15 breaths per minute. It's good to know this because that also correlates with stress too. Your breathing rate and your stress rate are pretty much related. Just knowing about this can actually help you better manage stress. I think if I can see it in my physiological parameters that, hey, it looks like my body's taking a beating today, I need to kind of cool down and relax. I think that's powerful.
And Samir, a final question before we let you go. Sounds like you haven't launched the BioStrap yet, correct?
That's right. Yeah, we're still working hard to make the release date, which is going to be mid-December.
Okay.
So not too far.
And how much will it be?
Yeah, it's going to be over $249. And it comes with the whole set, you know, the shoe clip, the wristband, and a couple extra bands. And we're really excited to launch this.
Fantastic. Biostrap.com. Biostrap.com is the website. At Biostrap is the Twitter handle. So, Samir, thanks so much for joining us.
Samir
Santake from Biostrap out of LA. And good luck with the product. It's always interesting to hear new things here on Sports Medicine Weekly.
Thank you so much, Dr. Cole. Thanks for having me.
You got it. Back with more with Dr. Cole after this.
I'd been having knee pain for quite some time and did what probably a lot of people do. I just ignored it and hoped it would go away. After a month, I couldn't take the pain anymore. I went to my family orthopedic. He told me that I needed physical therapy. When I received my prescription for therapy, the first thing I did was search PT companies online. I came across ATI Physical Therapy. It's close to home, has some great reviews, and when I called, they verified my insurance, scheduled me right away. No wait, everything was so easy, and the staff was great. They kept my doctor informed of my progress along the way. Honestly, I look forward to going to my appointments. ATI made me feel like my recovery was their most important priority. I'd recommend them to anyone needing physical therapy. The experience was something I'll never forget.
To learn more about what it's like to be a patient at ATI Physical Therapy, visit ATIPT.com and start your journey to get back to your best today. ATIPT.com.
Midwest Orthopedics at Rush is nationally recognized as a leader in comprehensive orthopedic services. As team physicians for the Chicago Bulls, Chicago White Sox, and Chicago Fire Soccer Club, their physicians understand the importance of quality care for high-performance athletes and weekend warriors. Regardless of the level of the athlete, recreational, high school, college, or even professionals, Midwest Orthopedics at Rush strives to provide the highest quality, state-of-the-art healthcare services. To better serve their patients, they provide expert care across five Chicagoland locations with a new location in Munster, Indiana. Their cutting-edge research, diagnosis, methods, and treatments make them the highest-ranked program in the state of Illinois by U.S. News and World Report rankings. For more information or to schedule an appointment, visit them at rushortho.com or call 877-MD-BONES. Midwest Orthopedics at Rush, when only the best will do.
You're listening to Sports Medicine Weekly on ESPN 1000.
Welcome back to Sports Medicine Weekly. Steve Cashel and Dr. Brian Cole with you. And Dr. Cole, a study was done recently finding that at least 350 companies are marketing unapproved stem cell treatments aimed at everything from facelifts to Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's disease. I mean, unapproved stem cell procedures at more than 570 U.S. clinics.
Yeah,
what's going on?
You know, we've had a number of episodes on this, and you know that I always take a very, not a nihilistic approach, but a very realistic approach as to what stem cell and regenerative medicine really means. And it's said that the United States now has the highest volume of stem cell tourism in the world. And, I mean, that's because there is a portion of the stem cell world that is very unregulated. Stem cells are cells that have the ability to produce growth factors, to reduce inflammation and things like that, and can be particularly helpful. And they've been looked at everything from treating Alzheimer's and Parkinson's to leukemias and pediatric cancers. And we've used it in orthopedics in, as an augmentation for rotator cuff repairs and cartilage surgery and even treating osteoarthritis. And the reality is that there's a whole category that is not particularly regulated by the FDA because it's minimally manipulated tissue. In other words, we can concentrate stem cells, for example, from bone marrow, and the FDA doesn't have oversight. We can take stem cells from fat by just mechanically spinning it down on a centrifuge and then re-inject it in various areas. And technically, because it has no formal labeling, you can't make claims, but the challenge is that there are, unfortunately, clinics, you can go online and find these clinics, and they exist in Chicago as well as around the country, that have, we'll say, specific claims that that can be particularly misleading. It's rare. I would say it's rarely dangerous, but the bigger challenge is it's often either ineffective or it doesn't meet the expectations of a patient. I mean, I get a number of patients say, look, I saw Dr. So-and-so who said that if I do this, I can prevent the need for knee replacement, or I can cure my Parkinson's disease, or do something that's really quite profound that, honestly, there's not a shred of scientific literature to support that contention. So I can tell you that our efforts have really been towards research because there's so much misperception and misunderstanding. And the bottom line is it's sort of buyer beware.
And these companies and clinics are charging a lot of money for these procedures, right?
Yeah, I've seen numbers that range between $5,000 and $20,000.
Wow.
And I've had patients who are traveling abroad, and they do it. You'll see it in countries in the Caribbean and so forth to try to skirt some of the FDA issues. So I would say that, from a patient's perspective, you should ask the hard questions. You should ask if data exists to support this. Talk about what the potential side effects are. It's really all about expectations. And as a patient, you have a responsibility to ask the difficult questions, especially about efficacy. You know, what should I expect in terms of outcome? Will it meet will it solve the problem that I would like to solve? What will it cost, and what are the potential side effects, and really, what's the literature, the scientific evidence to support what a specific individual is recommending? I really encourage patients to do that with this and virtually any other treatment. I think that's where they have to take this kind of responsibility in their own hands.
Dr. Cole and Steve Cashel with you. How often do you use it?
So we're using a bone marrow aspirate, and then we spin it down on a centrifuge, and we're doing it in clinical study now. I will occasionally use it on – I will often use it on our professional athletes, as there's probably no downside, and there may be a significant upside, but there's a cost, and it's not trivial, although it's not astronomical. Our costs are around the $2,000, $2,500 range, not in the $5,000 to $10,000 range. But the reality is we tell every patient that this is used as an adjunct typically to a surgical procedure to hopefully improve the outcome or to reduce inflammation that's associated with arthritis as a temporizing measure, not to cure someone of disease, but to actually reduce the symptoms that come about due to arthritis for some period of time. And it's another alternative to very traditional treatment like cortisone injections and lubricant injections. So we always lay out the entire landscape. And from my perspective, I start with the things that are covered by insurance, that are safe, that are inexpensive. And then we sort of walk along the lines to things that I would consider investigational.
How about the success rate with your athletes and your everyday patients?
I think it's impossible to say. I mean, there is not, if you look at the arthritis.
Everybody's different then.
Well, everybody's different in terms of how they will respond and what kind of stem cells they produce and so forth. But at this juncture, we're studying it in a randomized double-blind study looking at rotator cuff repair. We're studying it in patients who have osteoarthritis of the knee and meniscal tears to see if they can fare better with an injection of a stem cell. But you know, the reality is, Steve, there's a lot more clinical utilization or adoption than there is research supporting its use. And that's the problem whenever you're dealing with an unregulated space or a space where people are potentially pushing the envelope. So I've been speaking a lot about this over the last year or so because I have to spend much of my day re-educating patients because of misperceptions.
Absolutely. So it's kind of a fun science, though, going forward, right? I mean,
it's
the possibilities.
It's extremely exciting. And, you know, when you look at, like, we have Dr. Richard Fessler, who's doing some work in cervical spine injuries and trying to regenerating just one level of function. If you could get one level of function, it could be the difference between using your hands and feeding yourself and being completely 100% dependent on someone. So there's diseases which...
You're talking about paralysis?
Yeah, paralysis.
Wow.
So there are injury states that this would be just absolutely in a mind-blowing way life-altering. But, you know, that doesn't shrink or devalue the potential application for someone who has symptomatic arthritis. If we had an alternative to some of these other treatments that actually stop working for a number of patients where we can use an inexpensive stem cell therapy, that too is a very viable option. So I just think as clinicians, we have a responsibility to do things that are evidence-based. And when it's not evidence-based, to make sure our patients are fully informed of the current status.
And Dr. Cole, speaking of stem cell research, how can people, our listeners, learn more about the research at Rush?
Patients who have interest in regenerative medicine can go to the rushortho.com website or briancolemd.com website and go under the clinical trial section. And we have a number of trials ongoing right now that really the primary effort is to validate stem cell procedures.
All right, back with more of our show right after these messages.
On ESPN Radio.
Returning patients who suffer from cartilage defects to an active lifestyle is the goal. Prochondrix, the latest solution from AlloSource, is an innovative, cost-effective fresh cartilage allograft designed to restore cartilage and restore life. To learn more about Prochondrix or allografts, visit prochondrix.org. That's prochondrix.org.
You're listening to Sports Medicine Weekly on ESPN 1000.
Back on Sports Medicine Weekly on this Saturday morning. To access prior shows, interviews, and valuable resources on sports injury and fitness, please visit our blog at smwhome.net or sportsmedicineweekly.com. Steve Cashel with Dr. Brian Cole with you each and every Saturday morning here on ESPN Radio. And Dr. Cole, time to talk a little bit about the pediatric patients. Do you see injuries in some of the young kids?
We do, Steve. I mean, it's a relatively unique specialty. And in fact, at Midwest Orthopedics, we do have a specialist, Monica Kogan, in pediatric medicine and orthopedics. But it's specialized in that, you know, these are kids, typically their growth plates are open, they have growth remaining, but even more important, they get problems that are very unique to a young person who's also quite active that we typically wouldn't see in an adult population, and the decision-making sometimes can be very different. But honestly, it's one of my favorite populations. I don't know if you knew. I mean, when I went into medicine, I initially wanted to go into pediatrics in general, just general pediatrics, and sort of evolved towards orthopedics. But I love taking care of the younger population because, honestly, there's no agenda. They generally just want to get well, and it's one of the most ambitious groups of young people that I deal with, and especially because they're often dealing with multiple sports, and they just want to be active. And if you think they listen to you when they're better to take it easy, they don't, which is also kind of comical at times. and then plus it's also the challenge of dealing with the family, which I also enjoy. You know, it's not just the young person, but it's also the parents. And to see that dichotomy of how the parents may have a different perception of the problem versus how the kid does, and working with that challenge is probably one of the more interesting office visits of the day.
And you get some fun questions, right?
Oh, they're awesome. Yeah, they're very often very impressionable. I mean, that's like, I've had a number of young people who ended up coming to visit and stay in the office and see surgery and things like that, just because once they've had an injury and been treated, they see what an impact it has in their life. They all of a sudden they have an interest in medicine.
Well, to continue the conversation here about pediatric orthopedics, is the surgical director and chief of pediatric orthopedics at the Children's Health Andrews Institute for Orthopedics and Sports Medicine in Dallas, Texas, Dr. John Pawlowski. Dr. John, thanks so much for joining us. What are some of the challenges you face when treating pediatric patients in orthopedics and sports medicine?
Well, thank you for having me. A lot of it's like, exactly to reiterate what Brian just said, challenges with the parents, with you know, with the teams, and you know, we see a lot of is overuse. I mean, there's a huge problem in overuse with the early specialization with these pediatric athletes that all of a sudden seem to become professionals when they're about 8 or 10 years old, and that's really leading to this huge increase in overuse injuries and even acute injuries like ACL injuries. And in addition to that, there, as Brian said, there are significant challenges related to the growing skeleton and growth plates and some of the adult style operations that we would normally use to fix some of the ligament injuries are not necessarily the best ways to treat the pediatric patients.
John, you know, we talk a lot about some new advancements in, say, regenerative medicine and ligament reconstruction and so forth. I mean, what do you see as some of the opportunities for advancements in when it comes to pediatric orthopedics?
Well, obviously, that's a great question. The everybody's into biologics these days, and how do we use stem cells and other types of cells to treat you know, adults and regenerate some of these tissues? And I think the same is true really in children. There's a lot of specific pediatric diseases. We see one called osteochondritis desiccans, which is a cartilage disease in children where the cartilage degenerates very early. And we're currently using a lot of cellular-based treatments and tissue-based treatments to treat that rather than, you know, just, you know, the old-fashioned screws and fixing it with, you know, plates and screws and the more traditional orthopedic treatments.
Visiting again with Dr. John Pawlowski, Surgical Director and Chief of Pediatric Orthopedics at Children's Health Andrews Institute for Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. I'm Steve Kasha with Dr. Brian Cole at Sports Medicine Weekly. You're actively involved, Doc, in research. Can you tell us about some of the research you're working on now and how it can benefit patients in the near future?
Yeah, the pediatric world is just ripe for pretty much just about anything you can think of in terms of injury. And one of the things that we're really heavily involved with multiple institutions across the country is research on pediatric cartilage disease. And we have a consortium of high volume pediatric institutions that has basically pooled these patients together with these more rare cartilage diseases, really to see how they do in the near term with, you know, early treatment and how they fare over the long term over the next 10 to 20 years. Because obviously, what we want is we want the best treatment to turn that active young child into a healthy, productive, active adult.
You know, both of you have brought up growth plates. And, you know, Dr. Cole and Dr. Pawlowski, you know, growing up, boy, I remember I had a couple injuries in sports, and I never heard about growth plates. I mean, can you guys educate us a little bit and tell the parents, because I'm a parent, obviously, and two boys, very active in sports, and you know, one of my little guys just had a little foot injury, and they talked about growth plates. And can you educate us a little bit about growth plates and when do the growth plates finally shut down, so to speak? I mean, and you know, why why all the conversation? It's nothing new, right?
No, certainly go into that, and also tell our listeners, you know, because one of the most common things we get is, look, how many feet tall is my son going to be when he plays, so that he's going to be good at basketball? We get that a lot in our younger patients, and you know, just give us a little lesson on that.
Sure, that's always the big question that we get is every athlete, how much, you know, is he going to be 7 feet tall or whatever? But the growth plate is it's a much talked about, but I think poorly understood feature of the pediatric skeleton. But it's basically a cartilage plate. It's a cartilage area in the bone where the bone becomes longer, so that all of our bones start as big blobs of cartilage, and that cartilage then calcifies and turns into bone. So it's the expansion of that cartilage area in the bone, usually at the ends of the bones, that makes the bone longer over time. And so that can be injured, and obviously if it's injured, it doesn't grow as well, and it can create deformities of the bone, which are a big consideration when you're, say, reconstructing an ACL, where traditionally in adult surgery, you drill across that growth plate, which can potentially injure it. And that's really important in these adolescent athletes. Girls, the growth plate usually closes around age 14. That's when their skeletons are, on average, done growing. And in males, it's about 2 years later. It's about 16. And those are the times you really have to be concerned about these growth plates.
Interesting stuff.
And tell me a little bit about, you know, I know that you are also actively involved in treating a developmental condition, osteochondritis dissecans, which is a problem in the bone and cartilage that we often see in young people. And are you using tissue transplantation in that arena, such as cartilage grafts, for your young patients? And, you know, what's your primary indication for it?
Yeah, absolutely. That is really one of the best populations. When you look at the research that's been done with osteochondral allografts, so taking fresh cartilage from a donor and implanting it in a recipient for basically a full-thickness cartilage defect, so essentially a crater that's developed in the bone where there is no cartilage. We know those in young people, those do very poorly over time and lead to very early degenerative conditions like arthritis. And probably because these patients tend to have no other problems in their knees, their ligaments are good, everything else in their knee is good, they're the best candidates for the best long-term results with transplanted fresh tissue and cartilage.
And the final question, Doc, talk a little bit about limb deformity and limb lengthening, and you've been involved with that in your past as well, correct?
Yes, there's a lot of exciting technology with that as well. And that, going back to the growth plate question, that really is, those limb deformities are really due to dysfunctions in the growth plate. So if a growth plate is not functioning properly, it can cause the bone to grow crooked and, you know, with an angle that is bad for the joints. And if it completely shuts down, then it just leads to one limb that's shorter than the other. And there's a lot of new technology, traditional lengthening methods of stretching the bone out with fixators and these sort of medieval looking devices has now given way to rods that you can actually put inside the bone and with small microscopic motors lengthen the bone from inside, which is very exciting. So that world is really advancing rapidly as well.
What's your go-to ACL reconstruction graft for a skeletal amateur athlete?
It's somewhat age dependent, but I typically will use a hamstring if they're getting close to skeletal maturity. If they're really young, we'll use some of the IT band procedures.
Got it. Well, thanks. We have not had this topic on before, and it's really helpful, and we really appreciate you taking the time this morning.
Thank you, Dr. John Pawlowski. Really appreciate all your help.
Oh, thank you for having me.
All righty. He's the Surgical Director, Chief of Pediatric Orthopedics at Children's Health Andrews Institute for Orthopedics and Sports Medicine. Back with more of Sports Medicine Weekly after these messages.
On ESPN Radio.
The Chicago Bulls, White Sox, and DePaul Blue Demons rely on Midwest Orthopedics at Rush for advanced orthopedic treatment. So can you. We are the team physicians for these Chicago teams, and we're ready to be on your healthcare team too. Get expert care from these regional leaders at 4 Chicagoland locations. Learn more at rushortho.com. Midwest Orthopedics at Rush, your world-class team physicians.
You're listening to Sports Medicine Weekly with Steve Cashel and Dr. Brian Cole on ESPN 1000.
As we say goodbye, I want to take take a minute to thank all of our listeners and sponsors for yet another great season of Sports Medicine Weekly. As we conclude Season 6, we hope all of you will continue to catch up and enjoy all of our Sports Medicine Weekly episodes this season and seasons past by downloading our podcast site. It's never been easier. Just visit our podcast player at smwhome.net, where you can listen and download the app directly to your smartphone device.
The preceding program was a paid advertisement. The views reflected are not necessarily the views of ESPN 1000.